I missed it. I think I know that cue. And guess who? You lucky dogs. Just think how special life is. I'm here. Yes. And why is that special? Because I rode a short bus. I don't know why it's special. It's probably not special, but neither am I. Fish and Frank here, Robert in a chair across from me, and RJ in command and control. Let's see. Hopefully today the show isn't horrible. We're going to try to make it.
Is it ever horrible?
We're going to make it unhorrible.
That's
right. Possible. If possible. Don't know. You know, I get up in the morning and we don't smoke in the house, but I go on the back porch and I'm sitting there watching and this night heron, I think it is, the dark one with the yellow legs and all that. I don't know. But it was a bird, wading bird. And it canal's a little low, so I watch it fly up and go land on the mud bank. And it's, boy, you can learn a lot from that. Because, I mean, I watch this bird, it lands and it goes dead still. Just doesn't even move a muscle, not its head, only its eyes are moving around. And it's looking for prey right there. Because it flies in, wings out, you know, boom, boom, lands. And then just gets real small and stands there real still looking for prey. Now, once it looks around, probably about 2 to 3 minutes. And then it kind of turned around, then stopped still again and looked the other way to see if it could see any prey. And when it didn't see any prey, it took a few steps forward and then stopped. Just, you could kind of almost see that's how far he was looking in the water. And he just kind of moved up that much, stopped still again, and just stood there, only his eyes moving. And if you're going to fish the flats, and you're going to be fishing in the very shallow water, say in the Keys or Southwest Florida or pretty much anywhere in saltwater where you're dealing with this, and we've had, you know, down here a drought. So the water's really clear. Now, that bird can give you a really good idea what to do. You come in with your boat, and then you make like a hole in the water. No noise. You don't move around. You keep your hands as close to your body as possible. Because when a bird goes to attack something, the wings go out. Like you putting your arms out. That's a aggressive move, you know, having the wings out like that. So when you're standing on the front of your boat looking to see if you can see any fish, keep your arms in as close as possible. You know, have a long bill hat on. You know, your sunglasses are going to be real important for what you can see. What I try to do is match the color of my lens to the color of the water as close as possible. You know, and there's gray lenses, blue lenses, brown lenses, yellow lenses, there's all kinds of stuff. I'm not a big fan of the yellow because I don't really find much use for it. But with the brown, the gray, and the blue, if the water, just kind of hold them up and you look from the side you see through at the color and at the water, and then you can choose your lenses, whichever one's closest. Now, the lighter the shades, like the browns, any variation of brown, is going to make things pop more. It's going to bring them out, but it's going to eliminate some of the blues. That's why they're really no good in the Gulf of Mexico. If you get real clear blue-green water and you wear brown lenses, you're missing all those colors. So you need to switch to a blue or a green lens, and that will allow you to see all that stuff.
Blue or gray lens.
The gray lens, sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you're looking to see what the most visibility you have. Brown water, brown lenses, you get the best color ratios. You can see more fish. Gray lenses, blue, green lenses, not talking about the front, not the fashion statement that other people see. the side that you look through. That's what's important. But you stand there with your arms down next to the boat, holding your fishing pole tip down close to your body. And then if you see a fish, don't bring that arm way up to cast. That's why it's so hard with a fly rod in that real clear water. You got to bring that rod up. You're going back and forth. With a spinning rod or a bait caster, you can just simply flick your wrist, send that bait or the lure off in the direction of the fish. So the less movements you make, the less arms out, the more likely you are not to spook that fish. And it's a big deal. Now, remember when I was doing the eco tours a while back and I was learning to speak bird?
Yeah.
And people laughed.
Wait, I missed that. He was learning to speak bird?
Well, yeah, because I would put people within a foot and a half, 2 foot of birds that were 3 feet tall. And if you did what I said to do, you could be there and the birds were not bothered by you because there were so many birds on the island. You're just another bird there. But if you do the wrong hand gestures, I watch what the birds do when a bird would come into their territory, how they would do their wings, what birds were coming by non-aggressive versus birds aggressively coming into a territory, how they did their wings, their head. That's all how to speak bird. And I was trying to learn a bit of the language. You know, you don't know it all, but at least I got the basics down. Hi, hello, I'm a threat, I'm not a threat. And now I'm starting to take a lot of that stuff and put it into from the fishing aspect. Because the more I watch the wading birds, they're going along those same lines. Small movements, stop still. Small movements, stop still. Now, if I was going to go wade fishing for the fish, I watch these guys sitting out there a long cast away from the mangroves, and they're casting all the way in. And I'm thinking to myself, when I tournament fished, if there was not a line class, if I could use whatever line I wanted, I walked right on the edge of the branches, right next to it, trying to imitate a heron, an egret, what a wading bird, right? And I'd have 60, 80-pound test on my rod with the leader, and I would look for the fish. When I saw the fish, I would drop the bait right in next to him, not cast it, and literally drop it in, and then just drag the fish right over the top of the branches. You know, I got real heavy line. I can just lift the fish up. I took a fishing pole and a regular 7-foot rod and cut it down to just under 6 foot, put a new tip on it. So now I got a heavy rod, and I can just pick those fish right up over it. There's no fighting them. I was in it for the money. This was not a, you know, okay, I'm going to go out and have fun with these fish. These were fish that were there in the water. I needed to be able to measure and put in the box to win money with. So
it wasn't about mental therapy. It was about
money.
Money.
Yeah, it was just about winning prize money.
Yeah, and when it comes to that, there's just, it eliminates the fun. It's actually strictly 100% a mission and a job.
Well, yeah, and that's what it was for.
Yeah.
I did bass tournaments. I mean, we created several different saltwater tournament series, mm-hmm. literally from scratch because no one had ever done it before. And then later I went and fished other people's tournaments. And, you know, we've been involved in all kinds of stuff. But there's a lot of different ways you can do this stuff. But you see all these wading birds, and they're successful. And the reason you know they're successful is they're alive.
Right.
If they weren't successful at what they do, they'd be dead. They'd starve to death.
Well, and they've perfected this over thousands of years.
So when you're thinking about how do you approach fish, and you're in your boat, okay, this is my line of sight where I can see if there's any fish there. So then I take the trolling motor and I go about 3/4 of that distance. And then I'm going to stop again and I'm going to look ahead of me again. It's because if you go completely there, you're getting in the zone you didn't see and you don't know if you're going to spook the fish out. But if you only do about 3/4 of that, you know, you take your trolling motor and if you can see out 50 feet, you run about 30 feet with the trolling motor, stop and look again. So each time you're stopping to look, you're getting a new view of the water, new view of possible fish. And now you can, you know, okay, there's fish there. I can cast at it. But the more you wave your arms, the more movements you do, the less likely you are not to spook that fish. So you got to keep yourself small.
Well, and I think that's why kayak fishermen sometimes are much more successful than boat fishermen, because they are a little quieter, they're a little bit more stealthy, they're sitting lower to the water, they're making more of a smaller snap of the wrist cast, versus when you're in a boat, for some reason with me, I catch myself doing more overhand casts than I do side casts, even though I'm pretty good at a side cast.
Because if you're like me, you always get stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I'm on my boat and I don't get the front or the back. And
that's probably true, because I never thought about that until you say that. But yeah, I'm usually in the middle.
Yeah, you know, when you're monkey in the middle, you've got overhand cast or maybe an underhand pitch, but that's about it.
Yeah.
If you get lucky, get on the front of the boat or the back of the boat. And let's say we're going to fish a shoreline, a mangrove shoreline. Or if you're a bass fisherman up north and you want to go out with your buddy and you're going to cast lures up by the shore, bringing them back for, you know, trying to catch largemouth, trying to catch snook, redfish under the mangroves, it's the same thing. The guy in the front of the boat fishes from the front of the boat forward. He does not cast back at the middle or the back of the boat. That's the other guy's territory. You get a shot first at catching, you know, getting that bait out there, but it's so rude if you're on the front of the boat to be pitching backwards. And I see guys do it all the time. Oh, I missed that spot. Well, yeah, that gives the other guy the shot at it. Yeah, you missed it. Tough luck, you know?
Right.
It's kind of like with the coronavirus. There's like 99% of the people are really cool. And then you've got people that are either freaked out or just not nice to begin with. Somebody asked me, have you seen a lot more, you know, mean people or people really upset because of the coronavirus? I said, not really. I mean, it's kind of the same jerks that were out there before. They just got a bigger excuse to be more jerky.
Right.
You know, okay, now I can, you know, somebody's freaked out from the virus and they're doing dumb stuff. And it's really hard when you're looking at somebody and, you know, they've got all the regalia on and, you know, they've got mask and gloves and a snorkel and, you know, like RJ had, you know. So, but it's hard not. But I don't think there's any more people weird. I think they're just sometimes.
I think it kind of stretches it. You know, when you put the population under pressure, the jerks get jerkier, the nice people get nicer. And that's going to be consistent whether we've got problems out there or not, or your people you're going fishing with. You go fishing with a jerk, he's going to behave like a jerk.
So anyway, let's set up some ground rules. If you're in the front of the boat, you get from the bow of the boat out in front of the boat. If you're in the middle, well, you're screwed. But if you're on the back of the boat, you know, you get from where the bow all the way back and behind the boat. That's the fair way to do this. So the guy in the front isn't pitching there, so the guy in the back can actually make those casts. And the object behind it is, so if you miss a couple spots as the front guy, the guy in the back gets to take shots at those. And that sounds reasonable, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if you were using artificials, would you have the guy in the front using one type of bait and the guy in the back of the boat using a different kind of bait?
Now, I'm going to go with the guy in the front with a topwater and the guy in the back either with something subsurface, jerk bait, paddle tail, you know, a storm twitch, a mirror lure MR-17. But the guy in the front, if he's working a topwater, he's going to kind of get him chummed up, get stuff ready for the guy in the back to hit.
Okay.
And then when whoever catches a fish, you can reverse the roles.
Okay.
You know, that guy takes the rod and casts the topwater in the front, and the other guy takes the rod and fishes out of the back. You don't even have to switch rods. I mean, they're fishing poles. I mean, you pretty much know how to use it.
Right.
So just switch rods and positions and rods, you know. Okay, here, you take the topwater rod, I'll take the subsurface rod. Because the guy in the front is going to chum him up with that topwater, get him interested, and then the guy who's fishing actually in the water column, not on top of it, is got much more likely chance to get hit. What would you do, RJ? Both topwaters, yeah, both down on the bottom, jigs?
Exactly what you were saying is what I would do. If you got to mix it up, and it may not necessarily be one guy's going to drive him up, but whatever the fish are interested in at that time and place and weather conditions and everything else, they're going to pick one out of three, right? And if they start whacking the top waters, then everybody else should change and go to top water, don't you think?
Well, no, because in this instance, what I'm doing is using the top water to get them excited, but you actually catch more with a subsurface, something in the middle.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't change it out. I would leave it in that structure, but maybe just allow one guy to do one thing and then switch out so everybody gets a shot. But you got a new Reaper. You came down and got a Reaper rod.
I did. I'm so excited about that rod. I'm going to go fishing this Saturday. Hell or high water, I'm going out there. Virus, I don't care. I'm going out. I'm going to go bass fishing.
Now, you get a Clash 2000 on the lighter action Reaper. What do you think of the feel of it so far?
You know, it's got this great balance to it. I mean, you hold it in your hand and you're thinking, I cast this thing a half a mile the way it feels. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward. I'm waiting to see too how it works when you're fighting a fish.
It's now the one thing when somebody gets a new Reaper, you came down and you got the Clash and the Reaper set up. It's a tiny bit heavier than if you use the Shimano CI4, but for me, I almost like it a little better because that extra ounce gives me a little less tip weight. Because you got two different weights, physical weight of the rod. Let's say the whole thing weighs a half a pound, but you got a quarter of a pound on the weight of the tip that you have to lift up. And then you have the other half a pound or the other quarter pound that you're lifting as a total weight. But when you put a little bit more on the reel, it makes that tip feel a little lighter when it's balanced in your hand. Where when you use like the Shimano CI4, the overall weight of everything is lighter.
Right, but the tip still feels like it's off balance to me because it feels like the tip wants to fall down.
And it
just a little bit, but enough, you know, like you're saying, trying to balance a reel, you know, it's the way that Reaper is built. It's built just I don't even know how to describe it other than it just, you're right, with that metal body. Clash just balances a lot better where it just feels a little bit more comfortable.
And now, this is not the truth, boys and girls. These are opinions because people always ask me, why do you try so many reels on the rod? Because everybody's wrist and hands are a little bit different. You know, somebody might have broke their wrist at one point, so it's going to have different aches and pains or a sprained wrist. So
Arthritis.
There's all kinds of things. So don't say, okay, well, Frank said this one's better than that one. That's not the truth of this. The truth of this is you have to pick it up and feel what it's like for yourself. You know, don't take somebody else's word, oh, this is a great setup. Go into the store, put the reel on, balance it out, see which one feels better for you. Some people are going to like the overall lightweight of the CI4. Some people are going to like the extra tip balance with the Clash. There's no set guidelines to this.
Well, how many times have we sent somebody back home to go grab their reel or to grab their rod before they match it up so that way we can put several different reels on that rod or vice versa to let them understand the feeling of it? Because you do it all the time with teaching people how different rods feel in general, but they come in and think, even as good as I am, with a lot of things from just the years of experience, there's been times where it's like, yeah, I think that would be a perfect match for the reel I've got at the house. So I buy the rod, go home, put the reel on it, and go, well, that was really terrible.
Yeah, that really sucks.
You know? Yeah. It's like, okay, never mind, I wasn't that good.
And you got to remember, fishing with a rod and reel involves all this repetitive movement. You're going to do something over and over and over again. And if it's not comfortable, you're going to do some damage to yourself. So you got to get, the tools got to fit you. And that's part of the process. You know, you don't walk into Walmart and buy something off the shelf and expect to get years out of it because it may not fit the way you are. But
it's not even that. It's, you know, there's nothing wrong with going to Walmart and buying a combo. Nothing wrong with that at all. If you know what you're looking for.
If you know what you're looking for, right.
If you know what you want and you know what you're looking for, you can, if you're buying on the internet or Walmart or whatever, you're not really getting hurt. But when you don't know anything, even if you paid, you know, like we try to be the same price at all the chain stores. But let's say you had to pay a little bit more. and you can get something that will do what you want it to do. I had a kid in a wheelchair. Was it yesterday?
Yesterday.
And now I'm taking his word for stuff that, you know, oh, I like this and I like that. He had no idea what the heck he was asking about. Here's a guy in a wheelchair. He had damage to his spine, so very limited use of his hands or, you know, all this stuff. And he's explaining to me all what he wants to do and how he was going to do this and how he's going to do that. And no, not one bit of it was I able, none of the information he gave me was realistic. I picked out a rod. He was going to use a push button rod because he thought that would be so much better. He can't squeeze the button and hold it. I said, but if we take a spinning rod, well, those are too hard. I said, how the heck would you know? You don't know anything about this. Everything you've told me is you're guessing. I said, so let me set you up. So I took him out back in the parking lot. I gave him a spinning rod. We put a quarter-ounce lead on it. Because with this, he could cast like people do up north, where they kind of hold it in two hands and then let go with one hand and throw it with the other. And he was having a little hard time getting the bail open, but we figured out a way of doing it. He could use his leg to roll it and get his arm up, still hold the line. But by holding the line with one hand and the rod with the other, he could throw it and letting go with his right hand, which he had a little more control of. All you had to do was hold on to it with his left. By using that two-handed cast method, he actually was able to cast. And then what we had to do was, luckily Chuck there, Chuck's Custom Carpentry, said, hey, Chuck, come over here. He had the front wheels on his wheelchair came out to the side a little bit. So I grabbed some extra 2-inch PVC that we had, and I said, Chuck, I need you to make a notch on this so it'll go over that bottom leg, and then we only got to put one bungee on the top, because he didn't have the strength to hold the rod. So what we did was we built a rod holder that he could set there and wrap with one cord and put his cast it out, put his rod in, and so he could put the rod in, and then it was in the place because he did better leaning off the one arm, and he could reel it with the other and fight the fish from the rod holder. So I'm really waiting to find out what happened with all that. But it kind of comes under the thing, if he would have went to a chain store and said, okay, I want that and this, it would have been completely wrong because there was nothing that he guessed about what he was going to be able to do. When I put 16 ounces of lead on the end of the rod, it just came right out of his hands. You know what I mean? So we went way shorter, way lighter, shorter butt. Everything about it was completely different than what he started with. And that doesn't matter if you're, you know, in a wheelchair and you can't move around a lot, or if you have full mobility of everything. If you don't know anything about what you're asking, how are you going to buy something?
Yeah, but the... And let's go to the other side of that. Sometimes, like, look at me. You know, I always liked a stiffer, heavier rod.
Right.
After a couple years of listening to you, and obviously I was stubborn, so it took a couple few years.
You, Robert, no, say that. It's not so, stubborn.
Yeah. Oh, imagine God. That.
No.
Hey, that's a pot calling the kettle black over there.
I'm staying out of this, boys.
But now I've learned, like, the different actions of the rod. Like a lighter action, you know, faster tip, you know, so, but it took me
years
and playing with some of those rods to see like, okay, you know what, this rod is absolutely great for this scenario. And I thought it was going to be great for this scenario, but then trying something a little different realized, hey, that's a whole lot better. So sometimes it's, you just, even though you think you've got the knowledge or the experience, there's a lot of times you don't.
Now, here's what I see happen the most. And that is a guy finds a rod and reel setup that he likes and he's comfortable with. Let's say it's a medium heavy 7-foot rod with a 4,000 reel on it. Well, he buys it in the Penn version. Then he buys it in the Shimano version. He buys it in the Daiwa version. But that's wrong. Don't bother. Get one you really like, and then every rod after that should be one you're not crazy about. It should, if you've got a 7-foot medium heavy, then get yourself a 7.5 or an 8-foot and then get a 6 foot, and then get a 5 foot. Different weights, different actions. Take the one rod that's your comfort rod, that one you like the best. But then you want rods that do different things. Cast farther. The longer the rod, the lighter the line I want on it. I want it to cast as far as possible. So I'm putting a little smaller reel than normal, lighter line than normal, with as long a rod as I can get, 7.5, 8 foot or more. Then, if I want power, I'm going to a short rod. I may even cut off one of my rods, retip it, and put like 40-pound test on with a 4,000 or 30, where I got a lot of power, but I don't need the distance, I need the power. But one rod that you have should be your favorite rod. That's the one you want to take with you all the time. Then don't buy it again just because it has a different brand on it. I hate to say this, but think like a golfer. You don't go out in the course with a whole bag of 7-irons. Oh, I love using a 7-iron. Now I got one from Spalding. Now I'm going to get a 7-iron from, you know, Eagle Rod or whatever the heck it is. You know what I mean? What is it?
Ping.
Yeah, ping. Yeah. Ping. So you don't just buy repetitive, repetitive, repetitive. It makes no sense. You end up with all these rods, which are pretty much the same.
Well, and a lot of people do that.
Well, isn't that what I just said?
No, wait a minute. Okay. A lot of people do that for the comfort factor, but they don't stop and think about, okay, it's a different brand, so it's obviously different, but they don't realize that they're looking for something different, because they'll come in and say, well, I've already got this, but I want this exact same thing in different brand, but I'm planning on doing artificials.
Right.
Instead of natural bait. Well, that rod that they've got is good for natural bait and or artificials, but sure, now you want something
better for bait, okay for the artificial.
Right. Now they want to do artificials, but they're still going to buy the exact same thing, but hey, this reel's supposedly lighter, but it's the same size, you know.
Well, here's a question, RJ. The Reaper you got, is that anything at all like the rod you already have?
No, it's very different. Very different. I tend to have stiffer rods that... Not so much tip action.
So you like that heavier overall blank. You're in the same thing as Robert. That's what Robert always liked to fish with.
Right, right. And I've fished with different rods before. And, you know, I'm really thinking I'm going to like this particular rod because it just feels so good in your hand. The balance is almost perfect for me, for my body type, for my hand.
Well, that's why when we were working on it, I was trying to go that way. But to me... Now you have two choices. You've got the rod you have with the heavier action for certain things, and now you've got a lighter action rod, which is the way I was hoping it was going to go, for doing other things.
Yeah, and I fall in the same category until just recently here of the guys that go out and they buy what they like that they're used to, and so you got five rods and they're all basically the same because that's what you're used to. And I think I'm looking forward to experimenting with something different that I really haven't fished with before.
Well, I've got a couple rods they don't make anymore, and I've got about three of them left. Once you get used to the Reaper, we'll go to one of these. It's lighter, literally one of the most amazing rods ever made, but they're super lightweight. They're super, I have to be careful because you got to get used to graphite because they're real easy to blow the tips off of because they're so delicate, so nice. But I love them for almost everything. But we'll get you into that next.
The big deal, Frank, is I'm getting back into fishing again. I finally decided that I've got to carve out time for me to go to the water and go fishing.
Shiner shortage. That's on my sheet here. What's that?
Well, I mean, the freshwater bait companies are telling us that we're going to start running into some issues with some of the freshwater baits in general across the board.
Why?
The shiners, supposedly, because, I mean, a lot of people have been on vacation.
Not vacation.
Or laid off.
They've been on coronavirus lockdown or laid off because of the coronavirus.
But a lot of the states, it's just fishing is essential, so a lot of people are fishing, so they've actually gone through...
Isn't it funny how in the South, fishing was considered essential, and up North, they said, no, you can't go outside. You have to stay in an enclosed environment with a virus.
Yes.
The people of the South, though, sunshine is good for you. Get outside. Get away from other people. Go fishing. But because so many people have fished over the last 2 months, and the shiner orders for bait shops and stuff have doubled and quadrupled each week, that these have to be grown. They're raised in a pond, and as they get big enough to sell for shiners, but it takes a while.
Yeah.
So no one was prepared for this massive onslaught of it.
Right.
So by this fall, things should equal out. But for the next 2 months, it's going to be a little iffy trying to get enough shiners to do everything with.
Going
to
be very hit or miss.
Going to be hit or miss.
They're just trying to warn us because they don't know if it's going to happen for sure or not, but they're anticipating it happening. So I think it's kind of nice for them to at least give us a warning, because there's a lot of times where there's a bait shortage and you don't find out until like that week before. And they're like, well, we don't know when it's going to happen. You might not see them for 3 weeks or 2 months, like frozen bait.
Right.
I mean, we went, 8 months without being able to get squid wings at one time. And it was just all of a sudden, nope, no more squid wings. No warning, no nothing. So it's kind of nice to at least have...
All right, staying with the bait thing and why things are the way they are, tarpon crabs.
Yeah.
People don't understand why they're so expensive. Because usually, if we're selling blue crabs for like black drum, you know, we charge about $2. And with what I pay for them and the dead loss and whatever, we end up making 50 to 60 cents on them, maybe 70 if I'm lucky. A lot of people buy them, I can make almost $1 on it. But
right.
Most of the time, we make a few cents on it.
Right.
But they're, you know, a couple of bucks a piece. But tarpon crabs are like $3.50 a piece.
On a good day.
$3.50 up.
Yeah.
I mean, they're expensive.
Yeah.
What's the difference between a regular blue crab and a tarpon crab? They're the same thing.
Yes, as far as what tackle shops carry, you got small blue crabs, which are considered tarpon crabs, basically anything underwater.
Tarpon or permit crabs.
Tarpon or permit crabs, which would be, 3.5 inches and under from point to point?
I would say, probably, yeah.
Roughly. And then you've got your typical blue crabs, which are going to be 5 inches plus.
Right.
And those are caught by crabbers in their commercial crab traps.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the little blue crabs actually have to be dipped up with basically a long-handled net, and they're caught at night because they're more nocturnal, and that's when they're easier to find. But they go out and walk the creeks at night with basically a headlamp or a flashlight through the back mangrove creeks and everything, and are dipping up all those individual crabs one at a time while fighting the mosquitoes, snakes, alligators, sharks, all of it.
So if you're wondering why there's so much, would you go out in the middle of the night with the mosquitoes and the no-see-ums, the critters in the water, and wade around with a little net and a headlamp dipping them up? At that point, and you can go out and do it yourself, you can just, you know, I would say you could probably go right down by Elgin and just walk the shorelines there along the water and dip up your crabs. Or at Placida, just get out in the water there around 10, 11 o'clock at night and just walk along until you find as many crabs as you want. Take a little dip net.
Right.
Don't worry, there's not much to be afraid of out there.
And the little blue crabs that the people are selling in the tackle shops, those are actual blue crabs versus the ones that people go up and dip net out of the passes during the moons when they're flushing out, are a completely different crab. Those are an iridescent swimming crab. They die.
Yeah, the iridescent swimming crabs don't live well. And you can dip those up yourself. We just got a lot more nets. And Josh, do I sound any better? I moved my microphone away. Josh said I sound like I was in the bathroom.
Okay.
He didn't realize I had to get out of the bathroom so I could sound like I wasn't in the bathroom anymore. You know. It's a separate room they put me in. They're not willing to be that close to me. We're
nice.
Almost coronavirus here, though. This table's got to be, 5 foot?
Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah, considering we ride in the truck together, we work together, and so we got a social distance. Give me a break.
Right.
Okay.
But
better. I moved my mic away. Thank you, Josh. Drive safe.
Those swimming crabs are basically the white bait of crabs. They
right.
require a whole lot of water movement, constantly exchanged with old water, with new water, So they do not do well at all. So don't go out there and dip it up a whole bunch of those little crabs to save.
You only want to take half a dozen crabs. But if you're going to use those crabs, how are they doing on the beaches with them right now?
The fish just started moving on the beach the last couple of days after this full moon. So they're starting, the crabs are working out on the beach, but so are threadfins. So you've got two choices out there right now along the beach.
Now, is it possible sabiki the threadfins out there?
Absolutely.
Absolutely?
Yeah. They're hitting, most people prefer a number 10 or a number 12 size hook sabiki.
I'm bigger on the 12s, but 10's okay. But the one thing that I would tell people, if you have a surf rod, something 9, 10, 12, foot long, that's a great sabiki rod for when you're on the beach. You got a long rod, cast it out, put a, half ounce, three-quarter ounce, I'd probably do three-quarter ounce weight, cast it out off the beach and jig it back to you for, bringing in those thread fins.
Oh, so you're talking about physically standing on the beach.
Physically standing on the beach, yeah.
Okay, sorry. Sure, I mean that would absolutely work. I won't fish for tarpon from the shore if I can help it personally.
Right, but you won't go in the water.
No, it's not even that. I just...
What do you mean, no, you won't? You won't go in the water,
Robert. I know I
won't. You won't go in if it's knee-deep. You run back to the land.
For me, it's a personal moral issue.
A moral issue?
Fishing for tarpon from the beach.
Okay, why is it a moral issue?
Because you can't start the beach and chase after them, and you end up having to fight them a lot longer, and it takes a lot longer to resuscitate them.
Oh, I just use a real heavy rod. I've done it from the beach and landed them in 20, 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to go along with Frank on that. If you're going to fish for tarpon on the beach, you need a stout rod.
You need a heavier rod than you would normally use for tarpon.
Yeah.
If I was going to go with a spinning, it would probably be that pen 10 to 40 or 20 to 40 pound, that 8-foot pen rod. That thing's got so much backbone in it. Or that new Sequence from Star, big, 50-pound class rod.
Right.
With 65 braid, maybe 80, but I think 65. And, I'm just going to put the boots to them. I'm going to turn them. They're either going to, break off or turn one or the other. But that's why I'm out there, get my butt kicked. This is not anything I'm going to do with light tackle. I'm going to just kick their butt. But there's tarpon on the beaches. There's tarpon in the passes. Are there tarpon in the harbor?
Yeah, they started moving into the harbor, too, the last couple of days. And they brought a lot more friends back with them. So there's huge numbers of fish throughout. The beaches have been wonky because the weather's been so windy, so I haven't gotten a ton of reports, but a few guys have seen them off the beaches. But the harbor, a lot of guys running the last 2 days are seeing them pop up all over in the holes and even in the straits there, basically between Cape Hayes and Boca Grande Pass.
All right, now, what's a general tarpon rig? You need a rod with, that has a 10 to 25, 15 to 30 or up strength. I'm going to say 50 to 65 pound test braid on the average.
Yep.
And then what are you using for leader?
60 pound is usually what I like. Now, if I'm around the passes, even in the harbor, I'll usually start with 80 for my leader. But if I feel that I've been fishing and not getting any results or anything like that, I will drop down to the 60-pound. But that's as low as I'll go for tarpon for my leader.
All right. Now, so I don't use as long a leader as most tarpon fishermen. I'm using about 4 feet. Average tarpon fisherman, I would say, uses 6 foot.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that would be about standard.
Yeah.
Now, I'm double-edged sword there during this time of year because, you were talking about the water clarity earlier with the sunglasses and stuff. In April, May, and basically all of June, or at least part of June, I'm going to use a 6-foot leader or better. Once the rainy season starts and the water starts to get a little bit more tannin, I'll shorten up my leader because fluorocarbon is fairly expensive. And I'll probably, even as the water gets darker, I'll switch from fluorocarbon back over to monofilament. But I'll shorten it up to about 4 feet because I feel the fish can't see it as easily at that point once that water gets real tannin and stained colored. But
you know, aren't we learning that fluorocarbon isn't the buy-all, end-all of leaders?
No. There are times where, for some reason, certain monofilaments refract light better in the certain scenarios, same as the fluorocarbon does. So it's not going to hurt you to experiment a little bit. But when it comes to tarpon, I want every possible odd in my favor because, you know, tarpon's Latin name is megalops. And ops is eye, mega is big. They're the big eye of the Atlantic. They have extremely good vision. With the water clarity the way it is, and me personally being blind, basically, and all of my fishing lines are high-vis colors. And I don't know how fish see colors in the water, but in my own personal thoughts of things, of taking my human thoughts and applying them into animal thoughts, I think that they might be able to see some of those brighter colored lines in some other shade or another. So I'm going to do everything I can to get my high-vis line farther away from my lure or my bait.
Now, to me, Spanish mackerel is the one I don't worry about the leader, you know, except for the fact that I don't want it bright. I want to do as dark colors as I can get. If I can't get anything but bright silver leaders, I whip out a magic marker. I'm going to do anything I can to dull it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything shiny, and you know, there's this stuff going around that swivel spook fish, and so you shouldn't use the swivel because it's going to spook the fish. To me, the number one reason not to use a swivel when you're throwing a lure is the fish will eat the swivel many times before the lure.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. How many times has a mackerel snapped you off right at the swivel?
Exactly.
6 feet away from the hook, you know. Happens all the time.
I mean, myth and legend and, you know, weird information go out, you know, it's on a, you know, rocket ship. It shoots across the country in a Learjet where somebody telling the truth about something is on a pack mule coming down the back, you know, path. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, I still use swivels for mackerel because it's the easiest way to join line to a leader. I like black steel leaders, even red steel leaders for them. Silver actually attracts them better, but then you end up losing more stuff.
Yeah.
So the Spanish mackerel kind of made a comeback here, didn't they?
Yeah, they got a little quiet for a week or two there, but now we're starting to hear more of them, and there's still some in the upper harbor, but it seems like the majority of them moved down to the lower end of the harbor and out through the passes. And out to about, from the passes out to about 10, 15 miles in some cases. A lot of mixed reports on them, but there's been some kings mixed in with them as you get a little bit further offshore, both smaller kings and some bigger kings.
Well, but
it down there it seems like the Cape Hayes, between Cape Hayes Reef and Danger Reef,
right,
and then also the northern tip of Boquilla where those two big sandbar islands are out there off the north end of Pine Island. There's been some good reports of the Spanish down there because a lot of guys have been looking for some of the smaller sharks and then other guys are looking for bait and then catching Spanish mackerel while they're messing around trying to find some of the thread fins and white bait that's been down there.
All right. With the Spanish mackerel, the best lures to use are lures you don't like. Because if you want to get rid of them.
I got a bunch of those in my
tackle. Yeah, me too.
I mean,
Why did I buy that?
Yeah, because people come in all the time and say, what's the best thing I can throw for Spanish mackerel? I'm going, what do you got in your box you don't like? Why are you going to spend all that money on a lure for Spanish mackerel?
Yeah, because they'll hit anything just
about. Yeah, you go into your box, you find the worst stuff you have with the dumbest colors you can think of, stuff you're never going to use again. Put a black or a red steel leader on it, swivel the whole bit, and go out and start throwing it. You got about an 80% chance the mackerel are going to love it. And, you know, thank you guys for coming in and wanting to spend $6, $8, $10 on a lure to catch mackerel with. But I got to tell you, I would be digging through that box and going, nah, I don't like this. I'm going to give this one a shot. Because, you know, you probably got at least a 50-50 chance of not reeling that lure back in.
That's right. You open the box up and you say, oh, I hate that lure. I'll never use that one again. Throw it out. You'll catch a mackerel on it.
As long as I would say less than 4 inches long.
It can
be down to from, let's say, an inch and a half to 4 inches. anywhere in that range. You could probably, if it's a little bit cloudy day, you get away with top waters. But for the most part, any old spoon that doesn't work on anything, any kind of lure with a lip on it, is, you know, I mean, pretty much pick stuff you don't like. I appreciate you wanting to give me money to get lures for this stuff, but I got to tell you, I think it's kind of a waste.
Even if it doesn't have a lip on it, because there's been times where you get out there and, you know, Spanish are a schooling fish most of the time. So if you get into an area where you see a good amount of them, I've used a couple of my broken lipped lures where I've broken the lip off, bouncing it off a piling or something, throwing it out there. And okay, so it swims like junk, but it's barely under the surface and it's waddling along. I've had them eat that too.
Yeah, mackerel.
And it was no harm, no foul, because at that point it was already wrecked.
Yeah, you know I own the tackle store, and I know I'm supposed to be telling you, oh, buy this because this is what you got to have for Spanish mackerel. But I got to tell you, to me, I think, be realistic. The truth of it is, go through your box, find those old walleye jigs. These aren't that big a fish. Back your drag down a little bit, just like you would for walleye, and go out and throw the walleye stuff at them. Throw the spoons you never use anymore. Anything you got in your box is what I'd be trying first. If that doesn't work and your stuff is just really more junk than I'm assuming it is, then you come in, I'll sell you some stuff for Spanish mackerel. But most people have a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. you know, that Absolutely. They just never use.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I haven't tried for Spanish, and I think it would work if you have the old bass worms. You know how you got the ribbon tail aspect of it?
Yeah.
Go about an inch in front of the ribbon tail, cut it off, put a little jig head in front of it. I'll bet you it'll work.
Oh, I'm sure. I have no doubt.
Like a big curl tail grub.
Yeah. I mean, I've caught enough of them on curl-tailed grubs, so I don't see why an old beat-up worm that you can save the back section of and use that.
Yeah.
And not
hey,
have it
Josh,
be effective.
You're going to join us, huh? Captain Josh Olive, the fish coach, is here for the last 5 minutes. Also the host of another fishing program on 92.9.
That's the
a
one.
A competitor station Saturday mornings.
Oh, no, there's no competition with KDW.
That's right. We're a non-competitive station.
Well, not only that, we're just the freaking best.
Well, KDW is unique in what they do locally, so no competition there at all.
Yeah, this...
Listen, I heard you guys talking about Spanish mackerel, and you were talking about using the junk lures for them and using this form and that form. I didn't hear anybody say anything about shrimp.
Oh, okay. I hadn't got that far yet.
Okay.
Take us away.
Well, that's why I had to come
Captain
in.
Captain Josh,
lead us. I thought maybe you weren't going to say anything about it, and the only reason that I wanted to mention it was because I've heard from a couple of my former fish coach clients this week that they've been out. They had been doing what I told them to do, which was use your junk lures, use your spoons on your wire leaders or a fluorocarbon leader, whatever you feel more comfortable with, and they were getting nothing until they got bored, and one guy's wife and one guy's daughter, two totally unrelated incidents, decided to throw out shrimp and see what would happen, and started catching mackerel after mackerel on the shrimp.
Now, popping corks or free line?
One of them was using it free line. Actually, she was using it on a jig head.
Really?
The other one was using it with a float. I don't know what kind of float.
Okay. I use shrimp, live shrimp, for Spanish mackerel all the time. I fish in the same way as I do trout.
Right.
You know, under a bobber.
Which is a great way to do it, especially with a long shank hook.
3 feet under a bobber, either with the Mustad 37-140 Cayley hook, or the Mustad 92611 long shank hook. Either of those two are great with the Spanish.
Yeah, and the nice thing about that long shank hook is you can get away from the wire and not have to worry about it, because wire works, but it's a little bit more of a pain to deal with.
Gotcha.
How are you hooking the shrimp?
For me, I go through the head.
Yeah.
In one side of the head and out the other.
If I'm going to cast it out and let it sit there, then through the head, but I'll go in through the mouth and then out through the top of the carapace.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to cast and retrieve it, then I usually hook them through the tail.
See, what I'm doing is I go hold it up sideways so you can see where the guts and everything are inside. Then right above that, I just go in one side of the head, write it straight across out the other side.
You know,
easiest hook.
Nobody can see the hand gestures, right?
No, they all see the hand gestures. You didn't see the camera and the microphone?
I was listening the whole way down here, coming down 75, and I didn't
see any
gestures.
Oh, your radio doesn't do pictures?
So, no.
Oh,
I guess I'm
old time.
Behind the times.
Gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, we've had radio picture radio for a long time.
The other reason that I needed to make sure that I came in, I didn't catch the beginning of the show, so you might have done it already. Did you mention that Robert's birthday was coming up?
Robert's birthday's coming up. No, he didn't.
You didn't mention that? Would
How
you have mentioned it?
How far away are we?
We're getting pretty close. We're getting really close. Okay. Robert, how close are we getting to your birthday?
Two days away.
2 days away.
Really close.
Happy birthday to you.
You belong in the zoo. And you look like a hippopotamus. And you smell like one, too.
Nice. Thank you.
So, and here's the 40 more.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
So you're 40 now?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
You're 38?
No.
No.
48.
God,
you're
right?
old.
Well, that's why I only wished him 40
Thanks,
more. Because, you know, can you imagine? Imagine Robert in his 90s? He'll be a mess. So
he's a mess now.
That's
right?
What I'm saying. I don't need to take this out right. too long.
You know, you see those, you know, old guys in the grocery store, you know, chatting with the can of peas. You know,
uh-huh. Yep.
Going, you can't do that to me. I'm not going to let you. I'm going to walk away. Okay.
Nice.
Something to look
forward
to
later
on the list.
Awesome.
Snook, and we got 1 minute left. What are we going
to... Well, we'll go over just a little bit today because we got Josh here. So we got about another 4 minutes.
Okay. We got 4 minutes.
All right.
What would you endeavor to fill 4 minutes with, Josh?
Snook.
That's
Snook
what
talk,
I would do
because,
Snook.
I mean, that's a thing that's been happening. It's been happening a lot. But they've been driving people nuts. Because people are going out to the beaches now that the beaches are open, and they're looking at the snook, and the snook are looking back at them, and that's the extent of their interaction. That's all that's happening.
Well, because if you want an emotional relationship with the snook, go make eye contact.
Maybe
if you actually want to just catch the snook, see where they are, go back off where you can't see them, and then cast where they were.
Well, and that's why it's worth mentioning, so that you could say that.
Because, that I could say that?
Yeah, because a lot of people have not been putting that part into
social distancing works with snook.
They've seen the fish, and they've casted them until their arms are tired, and nothing else is happening.
They've gone on the island, into the cave, they've seen the varmint, and then they don't. Once you've seen it, you don't have to do that again. Get out of sight. Cast back to where they were. Robert, what would you do?
Same thing. You know, I'd be walking the beach and casting in front of me. And then fan casting out a little ways, and then walking up within, like you were talking about with that little night heron, stopping just inside of the distance, probably 10 feet inside of my farthest cast, and then casting again out in front of me and repeating it again, trying to stay out of the sight of any one of those fish.
RJ, is it worth casting straight out into the Gulf of Mexico?
Never caught anything doing that.
Can you resist not to do it?
No.
Okay, so
I just have to know for sure that
a few casts in front of you and bring it in, and then one cast out as far as you can, just because you have to.
Yeah, I mean, it might be something really big out there. You never know.
And then walk forward about 10 feet and repeat.
And, of course, this is going to work best in lower light situations. Those fish are going to be usually more actively feeding earlier or later in the day because they're snook, and that's what snook do. If you go out there at midday, then the best thing to do is just leave the fishing rod in the truck and bring a dive mask with you. And don't do like Robert. Wade out into the water, far enough out that, you know, you're roughly where the snook are. Put your dive mask on.
I would say about 3 foot.
Yeah.
3 feet of water.
You don't need to be super deep.
No, it's 2 to 3 feet of water is where I see the most.
And watch what those things are doing because they're really cool to watch underwater. And here's the thing. Once you get down at that level where you no longer look like a great blue heron standing in the water, they are surprisingly tolerant of you. And they'll let you almost intermingle with them. And it's pretty cool.
Well, manatees don't eat snook as a general rule.
That's true. Yeah, was that a fat joke?
Yeah.
Could have been a fat joke. All right. Now, for my buddy Josh,
on it too.
You took it that way. I was just thinking general people, you know, but you want to go that way, it can be that way.
I know why I come here.
All right, fishcoach.net.
Yes, .net, because we're fishing.
So, fishcoach.net to see what Josh's fishing instruction services are all about.
And, of course, lots of tips there for you to start sorting through. So, even if you don't feel like you need any fish coaching, go get some tips because we could all use them.
Yeah. Fish and Frank here. Robert in the chair across from me. RJ in command and control in the golden chrome towers of power. And our guest for the last 5 minutes.
Well, hey.
Josh, thefishcoach.net.